Steinar looked at his monarchs thoughtfully. There were times when he had to remind himself that Merlin Athrawes had his own agenda. Or perhaps it would have been more accurate to say Nimue Alban had her own agenda. Better yet, her own mission. The Archbishop never doubted Merlin's loyalty to Caris and the people who had become his friends, his family. Yet under all of that, sometimes obscured by that loyalty though it might be, lay the granite purpose which had sent Nimue Alban knowingly to her death, so that 9 centuries later, her Pika might walk the soil of a planet she herself would never see. There had to be times, Steinar thought, when Merlin found the imperatives of Nimue's mission clashing with his own loyalties here on Safehold. It could scarcely be any other way, and the Archbishop hoped whatever he had in mind this time didn't fall into that category. Yet if it did, he knew Merlin would meet that challenge as unflinchingly as he'd met every other challenge, and Steinar found himself murmuring a silent, heartfelt prayer for the soul which had accepted such a burden. "Well," he said then, holding out the whiskey glass which had somehow mysteriously become empty, "I suppose I should probably fortify my nerve a little more before I find myself subjected to such a stressful revelation."
"Oh, what a marvelous rationale, Michael," Charlian laughed. "Wait a minute while I finish my glass and I'll join you."
"Don't get too fortified, either of you," Caleb said sternly, "or not before we're finished with our immediate business, at least."
"Immediate business?" Steinar repeated.
"Oh, I know what he's talking about," Charlian said. The Archbishop looked at her, and she shrugged. "Narmon."
"Nar,"
Steinar began, then nodded in sudden understanding.
"You mean whether or not he should be admitted to the inner circle?"
Caleb nodded, and the Archbishop looked at him curiously.
"I'm just a bit surprised you want to discuss it when Merlin isn't here to put in his quartermark's worth."
"Merlin," Caleb said, "has already voted, and, I might add, treated Charlie and me to some fairly pithy comments on the Brethren. Something about decision processes, glaciers, cranky old men, and watched pots."
"Oh, my," Steinar said again, in a rather different tone, and shook his head with a chuckle. "I wondered why he hadn't been pestering Jean about it lately. It hadn't occurred to me that it might be because of something as un-Merlin-like as tact, though."
"I wouldn't go quite that far myself," Caleb said dryly. "I think it may have been more of a matter of not trusting himself to remain civil. He's pretty damned adamant about it, actually. And to be honest, I think part of that's because he's pretty sure Narmon has already figured out even more than we've told him."
Steinar's eyes widened with what might have been an edge of alarm, but the Emperor waved his hand in a brushing-away gesture.
"Oh, I don't think even Narmon could have gotten too close to guessing what's really going on. For that matter, I'm pretty sure that if he had, you'd have been in a better position than anyone else to notice it, given where the two of you have been for the last few months. But I do think Merlin has a point about his having put together enough to at least be asking himself questions we haven't gotten around to answering for him yet. And as we all know, Narmon has a distinct tendency to eventually get answers when he goes looking for them."
"Now that," Steinar thought, "is an outstanding example of understatement."